overlooked.
What kind of values do you stand for? Like you just said, there's pregnant women, there's babies being killed, there's no access to menstrual supplies. How can you be human if you're not letting these, if not letting aid in, not stopping the occupation? It's ridiculous.
It's all of our rights. It's women's rights, it's children's rights, it's human rights, it's really planet rights. Like, we're, by not protecting one community of people, we're really not protecting any of us, because it's a chain reaction. And when you fail to protect someone, you're really failing to protect yourself. And I think they have to remember that.
More protests are planned to occur for the length of the high-level week, calling for the freedom of Palestine from occupation and the preservation of the Palestinian identity. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Stay tuned, though. Bye.
You are listening to Iran Radio, and we are so glad to have you on this part of our schedule. And here are some interesting facts about Islam. Let's listen. Islam is the world's second largest religion, and it is a monotheistic faith with about 1.8 billion followers worldwide, originating in Mecca during the life of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of Allah upon him and his progeny. Islam means submission to the will of Allah, and its followers are called Muslims. Muslims believe in one God, Allah, who is the creator of all things and has no partners or equals. The Quran is the holy book of Islam, believed to be the literal word of Allah revealed to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of Allah upon him and his progeny. Muslims adhere to the five pillars of Islam: Shahada, or declaration of faith; Salah, or prayer; Zakat, or charity; Saum, or fasting during Ramadan; and Hajj, or pilgrimage to Mecca. The Islamic year is 11 days shorter than the year used in the Western world. This is because the Western year is based on the orbit of the Earth around the Sun instead of on the phases of the Moon. And we'll listen to continuation of Iran Radio. We start off this hour with the Spotlight, a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. After that, we have For Humanity, a variety of subjects from the Holy Quran, which predominantly tend to be social issues, are dealt with in this program. And we finish off this hour's program with our radio productions feature. Stay with us for the next hour.
This one lay. Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Britain, Canada, Australia, and Portugal are the latest countries to recognize a Palestinian state. They join more than 140 other countries which are backing an independent homeland for Palestinians. However, as the fanfare continues regarding recognizing Palestine, so does the genocide. The Israeli regime increases its bloodbath in Gaza and steals more land in the West Bank. Will these recognitions turn into action to stop the ethnic cleansing? Let's start it all off with the following report.
Palestine will be free. Thank you.
In a coordinated diplomatic move seen by many as a significant political gesture, the United Kingdom, Canada, and Australia have formally recognized the state of Palestine, joining more than 150 nations worldwide. The announcements made ahead of the UN General Assembly meeting in New York come amid mounting outrage over Israel's genocidal war on Gaza.
The Israeli government's relentless and increasing bombardment of Gaza, the offensive of recent weeks, the starvation and devastation are utterly intolerable. The United Kingdom formally recognizes the state of Palestine.
Some governments, including within Europe, have gone further. Spain, Ireland, and Belgium have announced targeted sanctions on Tel Aviv, ranging from restrictions on settlement-linked goods to travel bans on extremist ministers. The European Commission has also proposed suspending parts of its trade agreement with Israel, halting certain cooperation programs, and sanctioning far-right figures in the Netanyahu cabinet. On the streets, the pressure on Israel is equally visible. Massive pro-Palestinian rallies have filled capitals from Brussels to London, Paris, and Madrid. Demonstrators demand not just words, but concrete measures to halt the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Gaza. But so far, these measures have not slowed Israel's war on Gaza. Gaza City is once again under heavy bombardment. Entire neighborhoods have been leveled, dozens killed daily, and tens of thousands forced to flee in scenes of unimaginable suffering. The Hamas representative in Iran says recognition of the Palestinian state must be matched with real-world measures that can change conditions on the ground.
To come today to say that Britain, after 74 years, more than 74 years, that there is Palestinian, there are Palestinians who deserve to have their own land. At one end, this is very late. We need to accompany these appreciated and belated steps with some practical implementations.
As the death toll in Gaza mounts, some Israeli ministers have threatened to annex parts of the occupied West Bank in direct retaliation for the recognition of Palestinian statehood, vowing further action against Palestinians in the coming days. Given the circumstances, the moral question looms larger than ever. How long will the world continue to watch the Israeli war machine grinding on while Western capitals issue condemnations but stop short of taking actions that could halt the slaughter of the Palestinians and their forced displacement? Observers call it political whitewash by governments that for decades have armed Israel to the teeth, rallied support for it, and ignored Palestinians' sufferings.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Saad Nim, professor of political science, Beerzad University, out of Ramallah. And Mazen Gomsaye, university professor, historian, and author, out of Bethlehem. Welcome both of you to the program. Let me start this off with Saad. Saad, there's a global awakening taking place regarding the Palestinian issue. Would you say that governments are being forced to recognize Palestine due to the actions of their civil society in their countries?
As a matter of fact, I think that what the Britain and France and even Canada and Australia is now intention to do in recognizing the Palestinian state is something definitely good for the Palestinians on the long run. But the question is, would that stop the genocide which is going on now? That what we need now at the moment, and that is very urgently, to stop the starvation, to stop the genocide and the killing, especially after the new operation of occupying Gaza City and all the destruction that they are inflicting on the city nowadays. So that's what we need now urgently. So we hope that the recognition will lead to more actions by these countries, since now they are talking about a state under occupation, a state that it is recognized under occupation. I'm afraid that especially Britain, by doing this, it's not only to have a good gesture towards the Palestinians, but rather than the, because of the contracts, military contracts with Israel, they stopped 30 contracts out of many others, and the rest of these contracts are still working to provide Israel with weapon, and especially with parts of the F-35 35 aeroplanes. And I think that they did that only just to, you know, silence the public in UK who are in the streets on a daily basis, okay, demanding the government to stop the arming the Israeli army.
All right, well, Mazen, what does recognizing Palestine do when these countries are still allowing Palestinians to be slaughtered?
Indeed, thank you for having this discussion. I appreciate, like many Palestinians, that the mass movement around the West is starting to yield very, very small fruits, pittance, basically. And there's two opinions about this that can be given, which I see in the Palestinian street, including among my friends in Gaza who are literally starving and are forced to move from one place to another, and are their neighbors and relatives are being incinerated in tents. The two opinions, one says this is too little too late, that it doesn't do anything, that it's actually relieving the conscience of this Anglo-Saxon Western world that has been supporting the genocide and continues to support the genocide. So it is really not relevant and not important. The other side, the other Palestinians tell me, well, it's a very tiny step. It's symbolic. It's verbal, nothing practical. But it's a small step, and we hope that other steps will be followed after it, including the issues like sanctions, boycotts, divestments, as happened with South Africa. I myself am leaning towards the first option, but I recognize people interested in seeing even a tiny small step. And the fact that the U.S. U.S. and Israel are going to wage a war against this recognition, that itself may be an indication that there's something to it as a small step worthwhile.
Hmm. Okay, well, Saad, I mean, many of these countries, as have been said already, are still facilitating the genocide by arming the Israeli regime or helping with logistics and intelligence. So what exactly does it mean? Can a country both facilitate a genocide as at the same time oppose it?
Well, they are not even opposing. They are trying, you know, to get our direction to different area. That's it. They are like deceiving us in a way or another, or deceiving their own public as well, to say that they are doing this huge step, which is, you know, recognizing a Palestinian state. And they, today and yesterday when they announced it in London, it was like, you know, with a big festivity and a big, if it was, you know, a big issue. And the reaction by Israel, though they know that this is very symbolic thing, is also over, you know, to show that there was, you know, something very important. The need by the Britain and the French, these two countries are still providing Israel with weapon, and they still have their military relationship with Israel to make this kind of a step, and only to make their people think that they are doing something great and there's something, you know, good for the Palestinians. But as I said before, this does nothing to the Palestinians who are starving and those who are bombarded every day in this genocidal war in Gaza. So I think that on one hand, they are trying to show that they are concerned and they are helping the Palestinians somehow by recognizing a Palestinian state. And on the other hand, secretly, they are still supporting Israel in its genocide. This kind of, you know, it's confused us. This is something we can't understand. That's why we said from the very beginning that this recognition should be followed by actions by these countries to stop the war. This is number one issue now for us, even before the recognition. We do know and admit that the recognition of the Palestinian state of 10 countries to be added, this is really great and this is good on the long run. But for now, it does not help the Palestinians who are being killed, and it does not stop the war immediately unless these countries are taking actions and taking do sanctions and divesting of interest and in everything in their hands to punish Israel somehow, to stop the war and to force Israel to stop the war.
Right. Well, Mazen, I mean, are the current acknowledgments of a Palestinian state, how likely is it just another ploy to distract actually from the genocide and simply give the regime more time to continue to commit its Holocaust?
Well, let me be very clear. There is no two-state solution to a colonial, anti-colonial struggle. Never happened in history and will never happen in the future. So I think logistically, and everybody knows this, including the governments of the West, that there's no such thing as dividing country between colonizers and colonized. It doesn't happen, will not happen. I wrote a whole book explaining why it will not happen, why it cannot happen. So there's a charade of talking about two states, which was started about 100 years ago by Ben-Gurion, who knew that talking about two states at the time would mean people get the illusion that the Zionist movement may want some peace at some point down the road. And they do want peace. They want a piece of this, a piece of that, and so on. That's what they want, not the peace as you and I think of peace, which is the presence of justice, equality, human rights, and so on. So there's no such thing as a two-state solution. And the Western governments know this, and the Palestinian Authority knows this. Everybody knows this. But they try to either be ignorant or live in ignorance, or they try to deceive us by speaking like that. So I agree with you. There's deception in this, and it's a way to claim they are on the side of peace when they are not really on the side of peace. If they wanted peace, all they have to do is take the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and sanction Israel until it fulfills the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, including equality, justice, human rights, especially the right of refugees to return to their homes and lands, not the right to raise a flag on Ramallah.
Well, there are currently, just staying with that topic you just talked about, the two-state solution, I mean, Saad, there are currently 1,200 checkpoints in the West Bank with 100 just recently added. Annexation is increasing. Which land are we talking about when they're talking about that the states to be created and this two-state solution? I mean, what is left as far as their plan and what they are saying?
Well, yes. First of all, let me say that I do agree totally with Dr. Mazen. There is no two-state solution. This is two-state illusion, as a matter of fact, and we've talked about that many times, Mrs. Hashimi, on your show. The Israeli are now occupying more and more land in the West Bank, and there is no land left anyway. And when they are now declaring that they want to annex the Jordan Valley, which is 30% of the total land of the West Bank, when they are talking about, you know, enlarging Jerusalem with E1, a project that also will cut the West Bank into two parts, on the ground, they are doing everything to sabotage the whole area. So even when we are talking about the two-state solution for the Europeans, they are talking about it. They know exactly that it's not going to happen. But they can't at the same time talk about the alternative. The alternative is a one state with no Zionism, with no ideas like what happened in Israel as we know it. That's the only solution. It is a kind of a issue of colonization, and there is no negotiations with the colonizers. The colonizers, in their action anyway, it's an act of violation. Colonization or colonies are an act of violation, and how to act to that, to react to that, is also by a violent way. This is the only way to do it. That's what Frantz Fanon said anyway in when he was talking about the Algerian revolution. So I don't think that there will be any chance for the two-state solution. Give me anyone in Israel as a leader who will stand and say, I'm going to withdraw all the settlements. We are talking about more than 800,000 settlers in the West Bank and Jerusalem. Who's going to say Jerusalem will be the Palestinian capital for the Palestinian state? No way. And even they are not going to even think to discuss the issue of refugees. So the basis for a Palestinian state is not there. The Israelis finish it. So the only way that now they are annexing us, they are annexing us by force, and they will end up in a total discrimination and a total apartheid kind of regime where they are controlling us against our will and against our what we want as, you know, to be independent and have our own state.
And I mean, Saad, I'm staying with you because I think even, I believe it was just today that your university, Birzeit University, was even attacked. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. This night they attacked the university. They arrested all the guards and they took their mobiles. And then they entered and they searched some of the offices, and especially the student council offices. And then they left us with a huge banner saying that, talking to the students, addressing the students, saying that don't deal with the Islamic bloc, which is the bloc for student bloc for Hamas. Don't deal with them. Don't support them. Otherwise, we are monitoring you. We know everything, and we will arrest you. So it's really silly, really, really silly. But yeah, that's what happened this night. They are they attacked the university.
Right. So this is a reality on the ground in the West Bank, while these Western countries say they want to recognize a Palestinian state. Well, Mazen, I mean, the Trump administration is currently trying to approve more than $6 billion. More arms sales to the Israeli regime. So these Western countries, EU countries, are saying now they want to recognize a Palestinian state. Will they stand up to the United States to support, really support Palestine?
Well, we Palestinians and the whole progressive and world communities, Muslim and Arab people, and people of good conscience around the world, don't watch words, they watch deeds. And when we see such things, as you said, continuing dumping of weapons and money on this rogue state, this genocidal racist state, from these same countries who profess that they want peace and so forth. I mean, the European Union, for example, let's just take the European Union alone. The EU actually imported in 2024 $7.3 billion worth of Israeli weapons. $7.3 billion of Israeli weapons were imported by the European Union, and an equivalent amount of money was transferred by the EU through development and other aid to the State of Israel as the most favored non-EU member outside the EU. So if the EU is serious, if France is serious, or any other country, Spain, Germany, Italy, etc., then at least they should curb this. They should say, okay, we reduce our arms import and export to Israel. We're not seeing that yet. So as mentioned by your other guest, this remains paper on ink and nothing more than that, so it doesn't really help us.
Right. I mean, Side, obviously, if these regimes wanted to stop the Zionist entity, they could stop it immediately with no-fly zone, with sanctions, with embargoes. So what does it mean? I mean, as we're speaking, Palestinians are on a booby-trap roads trying to escape from the regime's bombing campaign in Gaza City. People are starving to death. And the EU continues with its vocal condemnations of the regime without taking action. What does this country's recognition, what does that mean for the average Palestinian on the ground right now who is being ethnically cleansed?
Well, the Palestinians were happy about the action that 10 more countries are going to recognize Palestine. We know that this is on the long run. This is good from a way or another, you know, in order to say that at least there are rights for the Palestinians. And now Israel is trying to sabotage these rights for the Palestinians. That's the only thing that we can get out of this recognition, to be Palestine, to be a state, and to be recognized in the United Nations as a full member in the United Nations. That's all what we can get out of this recognition. But on the other hand, what we need of these countries, we know that these are previous colonialists, and they are supporting this new colonialist. The whole idea that it is not about whether there is two-state solution or not, whether that we will give a Palestinian a state or not, it is about that this regime is a colonialist regime and this colony should end. That's period. In any way, and lots of people around the world now are recognizing this fact when they talk about, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. They mean it. It means that with no Israel, with no Zionism, I'm not talking about the people. We are not talking about the people. We are talking about, you know, the government. We are talking about the regime, and we are talking about the Zionists. This is what we're supposed to target. The Arab world should understand, the Palestinians should understand also, including the Palestinian Authority, that there is no solution, there is no negotiations with this regime. This is a colonialist. We know exactly what they wanted. They wanted to ethnically cleanse Palestine totally and to annex all of the region, not only West Bank, Gaza, but also their eyes on Jordan Valley, their eyes on Lebanon, their eyes on also southern Syria, their eyes on sometimes on Egypt as well. So it's quite obvious that this project called Israel with Zionism, it is a colonial project, and we have to stand against the project from A to Z, not okay. to negotiate with this colonialist country.
All right, well, Mazen, would you say that the key to ending this man-made horror is continued resistance, both inside Palestine and with civil society pressuring their governments throughout the world?
Yes, indeed. As always in these kinds of struggles, the resistance inside is the most important, followed by international support, global support, as happened with South Africa and their apartheid. That that's Western and Eastern and Global South popular support is bound to make a difference and is making a difference. In fact, these moves, verbal as they may be, wouldn't have happened if there was no mass movement. When you see a country like Italy, just over the weekend, basically shut down for a day, where there were in 75 Italian cities massive strikes. This doesn't happen in Italy for even Italian causes inside. So there is mass outrage by the Western public and by public in the globe, in the planet as a whole, against this hypocrisy of the West. And the U.S., there's no question about it, the U.S. is on the wrong side of history here. The Europeans are starting to wake up to realize that they are on the wrong side of history. They have a long, long way to go, and they have to apologize for things like the Balfour Declaration and the Cambone Declaration, respectively, from England and from France in 1917, and the Sykes-Picot Agreement 1916. They have to acknowledge their historic injustice to our people. Once they do that, once they go down that path, it's irreversible, I think, that's coming, and we should just keep the pressure, keep the demonstrations, keep the investment sanctions pressure on the governments around the world. Whether they are friendly to Israel or not friendly to Israel, they should take positions.
Okay.
If the world would block Israeli aircraft from flying over it, that's the end of Israel.
All right. And on that note, I thank both of you. being with me on the Spotlight. Zayed Nehm, professor of political science, Beirut University, out of Ramallah, Mazak Omsaye, university professor, historian, and author out of Bethlehem. And thank you for staying with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hossein Latifi and you're listening to our program For Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program we talk about different Quranic verses and Islamic teachings pertaining to humanity and anything regarding this being, human being, the beginning of the history of humanity and the end of this his being on earth, and whether individually or collectively. And in the previous episodes we ended up talking about the destiny, the end of this story, the story of mankind on earth, what happens at the end, and what does Quran have to tell us about this. This is very important and this is crucial for us to know what happens for us tomorrow, at least have some picture of the future. Makes major difference in our lives, in our schedule, in our planning, and this is very important for us to know whether individually or collectively what is going to happen to us. And we said according to the verses of the Holy Quran, well, there's something called Day of Judgment, Qiyamah, and we said there's a difference between Day of Judgment in Islam and other religions. Many religions, they believed in the continuity of life or continuation of life after death. When we refer to archaeological findings here and there, we realize that they would believe out of the ceremonies or the customs that they had in the burial of the dead people, we realize that they had some sort of belief in life after death. And according to the historiography that Quran teaches us, these are all the teachings of divine prophet, but it's very possible that they got through some distortion and they changed over time, and later on they got the form of some pagan rituals. But all of these teachings about the afterlife, about the hereafter, about the life after death, they are all rooted in the teaching of Ma'ad, the return, that was a part of the teachings of divine prophets beginning from Adam alayhi salam. But later on, as it is common unfortunately with human beings in different communities, that they create some sort of distortion and they change it in order to fit within their own desires and their own narrative. Now, we were talking about how the belief in the hereafter is embedded in the human nature and fitrah. We talked about some Quranic verses pertaining to this. And virtually, when the belief in the hereafter is part of our fitrah and nature, when we go against that, then we have some problems. Anything that happens or any immoral act, any injustice, anything that is not considered a good thing by the common sense. They are all rooted in a person going against his or her fitrah, innate nature, someday or some moment in their lives. According to the Holy Quran, fitrah is the part within our soul that guides us through different phases of life and tells us to do the right thing. And unfortunately, sometimes or most of the times, this fitra gets polluted with the carnal desires. So this will be true also within the concept of some beliefs, like the belief in the hereafter is part of human fitra. But unfortunately, it happens that when people go against that belief, they start committing certain sins or doing some wrong actions. We will have a break and we come back to talk about the verses of the Holy Quran that talk about negative consequences of forgetting the Day of Judgment.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In the first segment of the program, we said that the belief in the hereafter is part of human fitra and innate nature. And like everything else, all the bad things like injustice, wrongdoings, they are the result of people not listening to their fitra or going against their own innate nature. Now, Quran says those who don't believe in the Day of Judgment, though they fall into the trap of committing sins. The verse says, أَرَأَيْتَ الَّذِي يُكَذَّبُ بِالدِّينِ. Have you not seen those who deny الدين. الدين is the other name of the Day of Judgment. مالك يوم الدين in the first chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hamd, Fatahat Al-Kitab, you have مالك يوم الدين, the owner or the king, the possessor of the Day of Deen, Day of Justice. Now, in this verse, Surah Al-Ma'un says, أَرَأَيْتَ الَّذِي يُكَذَّبُ بِالدِّينِ. Have you seen the person who denies the Day of Judgment? فَذَلِكَ الَّذِي يَدُعُ الْيَتِيمِ. It is them, those who deny the Day of Judgment, it is them that do not care about the condition of orphans. وَلَا يَحَضَّ عَلَىٰ طَعَامِ الْمِسْكِينِ. And it is them that they don't care about the food of the needy. Now, you may ask, now we have seen some atheists who don't believe in the Day of Judgment and then they care for the orphan or they care for the needy. Yes, it is. The Quran doesn't say that people who don't believe, all of them are like that. But one root, one cause of neglecting the needy, the neglecting the orphans, those who are in need of support, are the forgetfulness or denial of the Day of Judgment. Why? Because obviously it makes sense that in that context, in the context of not having any consequence for your actions, even if you help a needy, if you help orphans, that is some sentimental, some emotional act. It does not fall within the greater picture of the benefit. What's the benefit of that? Then it doesn't have any benefit except for that occasional good feeling that a person has. I'm not saying that he's bad, but I'm saying that does not have any ideological explanation. Why, even there were some thinkers, so-called thinkers, that would say that we should eliminate these people, the people with disabilities, people, because they are just some reasons of expenditure of money for no reason. Now, this only can come from a camp that does not believe in the Day of Judgment. Because if you want to think rationally, like to the core of the word, reason in that sense is the source of just looking at the benefits and putting aside all the emotions. In that context, this calculation is correct, like because it's only some emotions that would compel you to spend your money on something that does not have any benefit. So Quran says no, if you have that Day of Judgment in the picture, if a person accepts what is the call from his own heart that the justice will be served and there is the Day of Judgment, then he will not have this. Even if he puts aside all the emotions, then his rationality would compel him to help the needy and take care of the orphan. Thank you very much for listening. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasul wa ali nabi al-azim.
Searching for the light, and you see no hope in sight. Be sure and have no doubt, He is always close to you. He's the one who knows you best, He knows what's in your heart. You'll find your peace at last if you just have faith in Him. You're always in my heart and mind, Your name is mentioned every day. You no matter what, my biggest wish is to see you one day, 'cause I believe.
activists who do not just challenge systems, they confront them head on. They blur the lines between protest and provocation, pushing public discourse into uncomfortable but necessary territory. Their work is often polarizing, but it's rooted in a deep conviction to dismantle injustice. My guest today is one such activist. Welcome to SOAR. I am Bahman Roy.
Calla Walsh is an American political activist, writer and organizer known for outspoken views on US foreign policy, anti-imperialism and Palestinian solidarity. She is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America and co-chair of the National Network on Cuba. Walsh has contributed to different media outlets and has participated in delegations to Cuba and Syria. In 2023, she was arrested during direct actions targeting Elbit Systems, an Israeli military contractor, as part of a work with Palestine Action US.
Calla Walsh, it's a pleasure to have you on SOAP.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to talk about your experience with Cuba and what drew you to Cuba as a focal point for solidarity work.
I learned about Cuba as a teenager. I read many books about Cuba, and I didn't even realize it was possible to travel there. And once I started learning about, you know, Cuba today, like, it was hard for me to believe that such a model of an alternative possibility to U.S. imperialism existed just 90 miles off the shore of the United States.
Right.
And I felt like I had to see it with my own eyes. And so I connected with Cuba Solidarity organizations who lead brigades every year to the islands in defiance of U.S. sanctions to bring material aid and to learn about the Cuban reality outside of imperialist propaganda. And I've been thinking a lot about, my experience in Cuba since I've been here in Iran, because it is also designated as a state sponsor of terrorism. It is also under these illegal unilateral sanctions
right.
that are genocidal, that are blocking life-saving medications and basic goods from getting to the island. And going there was truly transformative. Not just to, you know, meet Cubans, but people from around the world, because it's really an international capital of anti-imperialism and internationalism. And I'm so grateful for the time that I've had there. And I think it really expanded, you know, my understanding of like what activism and organizing looks like and how important it is to participate in internationalism and exchange, and as people from the U.S. whose government is inflicting so much pain and suffering and violence around the world, that we have a duty to, understand the impacts that our government is having and to resist those policies. Yeah.
Right. And how did participating in the U.S.-Cuba Youth Friendship Meeting shape your views on democracy?
Well, during that experience, I got to observe Cuban local elections. And just like Iran, you know, Cuba is characterized as a brutal, repressive dictatorship, and that is completely undemocratic. And actually, the reality is Cuba is far more democratic than the United States, and that the United States' definition of democracy, liberal democracy,
yeah.
where money rules elections,
yeah.
is not the reality at all, and that imperialist definition cannot be projected upon the rest of the world. And these, you know, characterizations of Cuba, like I was just in Cuba a couple months ago, and when I got back, I was detained. My phone was seized. I was threatened and harassed in the airport by TSA and Customs and Border Patrol.
What, is it illegal for you to travel to Cuba?
No, it was a perfectly legal trip. I traveled there, you know, on a license from the U.S. government, but they love to intimidate people. They want to scare people out of going to Cuba because they don't want people going to Cuba and doing and learning learning about the reality there. And they also don't want people, you know, spending money that will help the Cuban economy. They're really trying to crack down on tourism to make the Cuban people suffer even more. But I bring up that example to show that, you know, these lies that we're taught about other countries are actually the opposite. You know, the U.S. is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. The U.S. is a brutal, repressive dictatorship. And, you know, another difference I've noticed, too, is how Iran, you know, not being an island, being connected to BRICS, to Russia, to China, to all this trade, it also it has a different ability to, like, develop its own production, its own manufacturing of, say, you know, like, missiles and drones and other products that in Cuba it's very difficult to, because it is an island and because it is so isolated. Yeah.
Right. I hope you won't have the same fate returning from Iran to the U.S. back home. Tell me, I want to talk about a little bit about Palestine and Palestine Action U.S. What motivated you to be part of that?
Well, what motivated us to launch Palestine Action U.S., I guess I should say, for background, you know, Palestine Action UK started in 2020, and we're active for years and years. And Palestine Action U.S., you know, was completely separate. There are different Palestine Action organizations in many different countries now. It's become a really international movement, but it was the Al-Aqsa flood that triggered us to,
right,
you know, want to escalate our own resistance in the United States. It was not only, you know, the horrific genocide and bombardment that needed to be resisted, and the fact that those bombs were being built in our backyards, but it was also seeing the, you know, heroic example of the Palestinian people under siege, under genocide, going on the offensive against imperialism, that inspired us to also want to, you know, go on the offensive and not to beg the politicians in power politely to stop the bombing, but we decided we were going to go to where the bombs were built, and we were going to, you know, by any means necessary, try to stop them from being sent. And the first action we did, it was a few blocks from where I grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. There was an Elbit office there that opened in December 2021, and there had been many protests there. And then starting on October 12th, 2023, there were several direct actions there. At the end of October, I was arrested there. And last August 2024, news broke that this office had permanently shut down, because it became impossible for them to continue sending their employees into the office. No one wanted to go into work because they were constantly being protest and being scorned by the community. And so, you know, I think we really need to challenge ourselves, ourselves meaning people in the West who are in the pro-Palestine movement, who consider ourselves anti-Zionist, anti-imperialist, that resistance is not just something, some far away abstract concept. It is something material and tangible that we can be participating in, and especially targeting the supply chains that are sending weapons directly to the Zionist entity. And now that Palestine Action UK has been prescribed as a so-called terrorist organization.
That was so weird. That was
following it's ridiculous. It's so important we stand up for them and the political prisoners that are being held in the UK right now under counterterrorism laws, the Filton 18. They're being tortured. They're being held in solitary confinement. They are being moved in the middle of the night. Their families aren't allowed to visit them. And these are the so-called free states of the world. These are the so-called, you know, democratic leaders.
Right.
And so the response and the crackdown just goes to show how repressive and genocidal these governments are.
Right. Carla Voss, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. And thank you for being with us on another SOAP. Thank you so much, and goodbye until next time.
option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Good afternoon to all our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Today is Wednesday, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. The Islamic world produced the first skilled, specially trained pharmacists who made their own medicines and worked closely with medical doctors and physicians. A 13th century Islamic writer described the circulation of blood inside the human body some 400 years before this was discovered in Europe. One famous hadith Islamic saying is, Allah is beautiful and loves beauty. Beauty has always been, therefore, very important to Muslims and develops in the virtual arts such as architecture, calligraphy, painting, textile, metalwork, and ceramists were encouraged. And the continuation of Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with Black and White. The program covers the latest developments in Latin America and tells you what is happening in this strategically important region. Spring of Truth will follow next. This program presents a selection of the statements and speeches of the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. And we finish off this hour's programs with our radio productions feature. Stay with us for this hour.
Black and White.
Los instrumentos.
The instruments and tools are not the issue.
No son el problema.
The real problem lies in how they're used and who they serve.
Por lo tanto, el desarrollo.
Therefore, the development of virtual means and artificial intelligence is not something to be discarded. On the contrary, it represents progress.
Todo lo contrario. Es un avance. El tema es de qué manera estas herramientas.
The key question is how these tools and scientific advancements are utilized for the benefit of humanity, rather than for a select few who exploit and oppress the majority.
Que se dedican a explotar y a oprimir a la mayoría de la humanidad. Que es el caso que está sucediendo hoy día con los medios virtuales, con la inteligencia artificial.
This is precisely